Hey, it's Nishant, and welcome to Higher IQ. It's Monday, June 15th. I've been thinking about something lately that I just can't quite shake, and I think a lot of people have felt this, but have never really examined it. So I started playing guitar like 10 years ago, and I found that I picked it up pretty quickly. And because I was making progress so fast, I decided to stick with it. I also tried singing, but I was not as good naturally as I was with the guitar, and the early experience was pretty rough. And I'm not saying it's only because of that, but I didn't stick with singing nearly for as long. So if you asked me why, I think I would have told you that I'm naturally better at guitar than singing, that I have more talent for it, and that I was just being realistic about where to invest my time. The research on skill acquisition says that I was probably wrong about all of that. What felt like a rational assessment of my natural abilities was actually my brain chasing the dopamine hit of early success and running from the discomfort of early failure. The things I'm naturally good at might just be the things that rewarded me quickly, and the things I quit might have had a higher ceiling that I never reached because the first few weeks felt bad. When you start learning something new, your brain is doing an enormous amount of work, building new neural pathways, encoding unfamiliar motor patterns, processing feedback, and trying to turn conscious effort into something that feels automatic. The early phase of learning is cognitively expensive, and it produces wildly different emotional experiences depending on the skill and the person. If you pick up a guitar and strum a chord that sounds recognizable within the first hour, your brain registers that as a reward. Dopamine fires. The loop between effort and reward is short, and that loop is what makes you come back tomorrow. If you open your mouth to sing and the sound that comes out doesn't match what you hear in your head, the feedback is negative. Your brain registers that as a cost and not a reward. So you might practice again, but the motivation is weaker because the loop is working against you. Each frustrating session makes the next one a little harder to start. This is the same emotional avoidance mechanism we covered in the procrastination episode. Your brain is prioritizing how it feels right now over what might happen if you pushed through. The problem is that early feedback is an unreliable predictor of long-term potential. Some skills have a steep initial learning curve, but flatten out quickly, meaning you feel like a genius for the first month and then plateau. Other skills feel terrible at the start, but have a much higher ceiling once you break through the early difficulty. If you're using how the first few weeks feel as your signal for whether to continue, you're optimizing for early reward and not for where you'd end up with sustained effort. Carol Dweck, a psychologist at Stanford, built an entire research program built around this distinction. She found that people who believe their abilities are fixed, that talent is something you're born with and can't really change, are far more likely to quit when a task gets difficult because difficulty feels like evidence that they don't have the talent. People who believe abilities can be developed through effort and strategy, what Dweck calls a growth mindset, are more likely to persist through the hard early phase because they interpret difficulty as part of the process rather than a proof of limitation. The mindset determines the behavior, and the behavior determines the outcome, which then reinforces the mindset. It's a loop, and it starts spinning in one direction or the other within the first few sessions of learning anything new. There's another layer to this that most people never consider. What we call natural talent is often early environmental exposure that happened so long ago that we don't remember it. A kid who grew up in a house where music was playing constantly has thousands of hours of passive listening encoded in their brain before they ever touch an instrument. When they pick up a guitar at 14 and it clicks faster than their friend who grew up in a quiet house, everyone calls that natural talent. But it's not talent, it's environmental priming. The brain had already been building the neural architecture for musical processing for years. The natural ability that makes someone stick with the skill in those critical first weeks might be nothing more than a head start they didn't know they had. In 2008, Malcolm Gladwell published Outliers and popularized the idea that it takes 10,000 hours of practice to achieve mastery in a field. The concept became one of the most widely cited ideas in popular psychology, and it's mostly wrong. The researcher whose work Gladwell drew from, Anders Ericsson at Florida State University, spent much of his later career clarifying what his research actually showed, and it was quite different from practice for 10,000 hours and you'll be great. Ericsson's central finding was about deliberate practice, a specific kind of training that involves focused attention on weakness, immediate feedback, and progressive difficulty, usually guided by a coach or teacher. Deliberate practice is not the same thing as doing something for a long time. Playing guitar in your bedroom for 10,000 hours, running through songs you already know, that is not deliberate practice. It's repetition, and repetition alone doesn't produce improvement after the initial learning phase. A 2014 meta-analysis by Brooke McNamara at Case Western University found that deliberate practice accounted for 26% of the variation in performance in games like chess, 21% in music, and 18% in sports. Those are significant numbers, but they're nowhere close to the practice explains everything narrative that the 10,000-hour rule implies. The majority of performance differences are explained by other factors: genetics, the age you started, the quality of your instruction, cognitive ability, and how your body responds to training. Ericsson was reportedly frustrated by Gladwell's simplification. The distinction he cared about, the one the popular version erased, is that not all hours are equal. 4 hours of deliberate practice with a skilled teacher who identifies your specific weakness and designs exercises to address them is worth more than the 40 hours of casual repetition. You don't get benefits from mechanical repetition, Ericsson said, but by adjusting your execution over and over to get closer to your goal. The people who achieve expertise aren't the ones who log the most hours. They're the ones who spend their hours doing the hardest version of the thing they're trying to learn, usually with someone watching who can tell them what they're doing wrong. There's a concept from Ericsson's research that I think about more than any other finding in the skill acquisition literature, and that's called the OK plateau. When you first learn a skill, you improve rapidly. The early days of learning to cook, to type, to drive a car are full of visible progress. You go from terrible to functional in a few weeks or months. Then something happens. You reach good enough, and you stop getting better. You've been driving for 20 years, and you're not a better driver than you were at year 3. You've been typing for a decade, and your speed hasn't changed since you were in college. You've been cooking the same meals for 5 years, and none of them have really improved. Ericsson calls this the OK plateau, and it happens because the brain is designed to automate tasks as quickly as possible. Once a skill becomes automatic, you stop thinking about it. And when you stop thinking about it, you stop improving. The hours continue to accumulate, but the neural engagement that produces improvement doesn't. You're an autopilot. An autopilot is the enemy of growth. This explains something that most people find confusing: why experience and expertise are not the same thing. A doctor who has been practicing for 30 years is not necessarily better than a doctor with 10 years of experience, because the 30-year veteran may have spent the last 20 years on autopilot, repeating patterns they've learned in the first decade, without ever deliberately pushing beyond them. Ericsson found this pattern across fields. Once someone reaches a level of competence that meets the demand of their environment, they plateau and they stay there unless something forces them back into deliberate, effortful practice. The fix is uncomfortable. To keep improving, you have to stay in the zone where it feels hard. You have to deliberately seek out the parts of the skill where you're weakest and focus on those instead of the parts that you've already mastered. You have to tolerate the feeling of being bad at something, even when you're generally good at it. That feeling, the discomfort of confronting your own weakness, is the same feeling that made you put down singing in the first place. The OK plateau and the decision to quit a new skill are driven by the same mechanism: the brain's preference for comfort over growth. The contrarian take on all of this is that sometimes quitting is the right decision, and the never give up narrative can just be as misleading as I don't have the talent narrative. Every hour you spend on one skill is an hour you're not spending on another. Economists call this opportunity cost, and it's real. If you have limited time and you're choosing between a skill that you're progressing steadily and a skill that you've been stuck for months despite deliberate effort, there's a rational case for reallocating your time. The growth mindset research shows that most people quit too early, before they've given the skill a fair chance. But it doesn't show that you should never quit anything. The question is whether you're quitting because the early feedback was bad, which is probably too early, or because you've given it genuine, focused effort over a sustained period and the progress just isn't there, which actually might be a legitimate signal. The practical takeaway, if there is one, is to be suspicious of your own reasons for quitting. If you're dropping something after a few weeks because it doesn't feel natural, that's your brain chasing dopamine, not making a strategic assessment. The first few weeks of anything new are the worst possible time to evaluate your potential. But if you've been working at something deliberately for months or years with coaching and focused effort on your weaknesses, and the improvement has clearly stalled, then that might be useful information rather than something to push through. I think about my own experience with guitar and singing, and I'm not sure which category I fell into. I stuck with guitar partly because I loved it and partly because the early progress felt good. I backed away from singing partly because it was hard and partly because I didn't invest in the right kind of practice early enough. I did eventually work with a vocal coach, which is exactly what Erickson's research says makes the difference. Someone who can hear what you can't hear and design exercises around your specific weaknesses. And it really did help. Which makes me wonder what would have happened if I'd started there instead of trying to figure it out alone, getting frustrated and pulling back. Would I have been a decent singer if I spent the hours with the right guidance from the beginning? Probably. Would I have been better than I am at guitar? No idea. The uncomfortable truth is that I'll never know, because my brain made the call before I even had enough information, and I trusted it. Most people do this. So if you're trying to learn a new skill right now and you find yourself getting frustrated, here's what you should think about. The skills you stuck with and the skills you quit were probably not determined by your natural talent. They were determined by how the first few weeks felt. Early positive feedback creates a dopamine loop that makes you come back. Early negative feedback triggers avoidance. The 10,000 hour rule is actually mostly wrong. Deliberate practice accounts for only about 20 to 25% of performance differences, and casual repetition barely counts at all. Most people reach the okay plateau, the point where a skill becomes automatic and improvement stops, and stay there forever because autopilot is comfortable and deliberate practice isn't. The growth mindset research shows that people who believe abilities are developable persist longer and improve more than people who believe talent is fixed. And sometimes, quitting is the right call, but only after you've given the skill a genuine chance with focused effort, and not after the first few weeks felt rough. The things that you are naturally good at might just be the things that rewarded you early. And the things you quit might have actually had a higher ceiling you never reached. There is no way to know without staying in the discomfort longer than your brain wants you to. Stay informed, stay curious, stay persistent, and we'll see you tomorrow.